Well, thank you, gentlemen. This is fascinating. I have lots of questions, and I assume a lot of you have questions. But what I'd like to do is just throw out a couple of observations and questions to the group. But before asking them to comment, I'm going to turn to you to let you throw out some questions as well, and then I'll turn back to the panel to respond in just reverse order, because I have it on the just because it's I'm reaching that age where I have to try to remember things. Michael, if I put together your list of no oil, ethnic homogeneity, and reasonable economy, which sounds quite logical, all of these apply, for example, to the country of Tunisia, which is perhaps the most, certainly competing for the title of most autocratic in this part of the world, far away from Israel. So I'd appreciate your, not that you're a Tunisian expert, but what might account for how democracy has failed to scale the walls of Tunis? I hope I'm not reading between the lines too much, but I sensed a very interesting sub-debate between Ken and Lauren on their emphasis on the modernizing potential of Islamist parties versus what needs to be done with all the non-Islamist parties to fill the gap. Now, maybe I'm reading too much, but Ken, your presentation was strongly influenced by the theme of here we have a group of parties that are now playing by the game in which we should encourage. And I heard Lauren emphasize all the things that we need to do, not to do that, but all the things that we can and should do to strengthen all the liberal parties that are not that are caught between the Muslim Brotherhood, say, and the regime on the other side. And I think there's a very interesting contrast here. Can we do both at the same time? And is there or is there not a trade-off in trying to do both, is my question to you. And lastly, to Scott, I thought your five got it rights and five what we could do better was brilliant. And now as we look out into a presidential election campaign, if you had your brief 2 minutes with a leading candidate, how would you have them answer Tim Russert's question on in some future debate? You only have a 30-second answer in this debate. Should America really be promoting democracy, and how, in the Middle East? Gentlemen, now I'm going to turn over to the floor, and we have, I think, handhelds, is that right? Because we don't have table mics? We have only...
There are table mics to the
left. Oh, there are table mics on the side, so you have to... I apologize for you, because we have a technical problem today. You have to go to the side here to use these...
Or speak louder.
Or you wait there. No, I'm going to ask you to use one of the mics.
Yes, sir.
And then Michelle on my left.
Okay, I'm Avi Becker, a visiting professor at Georgetown, and I'm sorry, I apologize, I have to leave because I have to teach in half an hour. I would like really to pick up your initiative, the FIKRA, to walk into this field of ideas. I'm for democracy. I think that we should promote democracy. Coming from the Middle East, I think it's really critical to have democracy in order to have peace there. Nevertheless, we should not mix up this mission of democracy with another concept, and Professor Mandelbaum has written on this a while ago, international order, international regimes, because there is some conflict here. This domestic analogy, as we call it, namely an attempt really to apply democracy on the international arena, is something which is not yet, I think, really ripe really to have it really on the international scale. Try to think, you're also dealing with non-proliferation. You're trying really to avoid the proliferation of arms among several states. You're trying to create, at least in order to have order, some hierarchy in international relations. So this is not really democracy at its best. So we need also to maintain some international order in which there will be some superpowers, some other nations which will watch it. You know, so this is something which will create a conflict at some point, probably in the future. So what I would like to suggest is really spread democracy, promote democracy, to paraphrase, you know, an English ruler, but keep the powder dry. You know, we have to maintain some international order as well.
And the question is, isn't this correct?
Yeah.
Michelle?
Yeah, hi. Michelle Dunn from the Carnegie Endowment. Thanks for great presentations, very inspiring. But I was concerned by comments by a couple of the speakers that suggested that the United States would be in the position to somehow disqualify certain actors in the Middle East from participation in politics, such as Hamas, for example, or Hezbollah, either because they have armed militias or because they we don't like their social positions are too conservative, or their foreign policy positions are problematic, et cetera. I was curious what Ken and Lauren think about that. The United States, as an outside actor, don't we have to accept from the societies in question who they think are the legitimate political actors, rather than trying to impose some sort of criteria from the outside?
Thank you. Jonathan on the right. Right behind you.
My name is Jonathan Paris. I'm a London-based...
That mic's not on.
Oh, it's not. Can I just speak loudly?
All right, go ahead.
Sorry.
Make the question short because of the time it took to get to the mic. I'm Jonathan Paris, a London-based Middle East analyst, and I work with an Arab promoter of democracy as well. My question to Scott is, how are we faring in democracy promotion in Syria? What have we done and what could we be doing to accelerate that process?
Thank you. Yes, please. Go ahead, just stand up and I'll repeat the question. Go ahead.
Greg Ross in the Senate. My question to Scott is, leaving aside the issue of the reasons we went into Iraq, isn't it fair to say that the challenges the U.S. has faced in Iraq are the predominant reason that the administration's democracy agenda in the Middle East has become suspect, problematic, and challenged?
For those of you that didn't hear it, the basic question is, isn't the real reason for the challenge to democracy promotion everywhere the problems we've had in Iraq? And then, yes, Tammy.
Okay. I'll just speak loudly as well. Tammy Wittes from the Swan Center at Brookings. I was very curious, Scott, to hear you say that despite the president staking his reputation and his second term on this issue, you couldn't get the Defense Department on board. And I'm shocked to find that this president couldn't make that happen. If the president can't do it, one thing I didn't hear any of you address is, what's the role of Congress? So if you could talk about the role of Congress. Thank you.
For those of you that didn't hear that, Tammy was responding to Scott's comment that the president couldn't get the Defense Department to support the democracy agenda. If that's the case, first of all, doesn't that say something about the president? And secondly, shouldn't there have been a role for Congress in all of this? I'm going to have to stop it right there because we're going to go way over time already. Gentlemen, any particular order that you'd like to go in? Well, why don't each of you address the particular issues that you think would be appropriate for you to address? And why don't we just start on this end, Lauren, and work our way down? Can you come up here, though, please?
I don't think actually there is much of a debate between me and Ken on the Islamic parties. I think... I think there's a question about where you draw the line in terms of who you're going to work with. There is certainly a debate out there about whether Islamist parties should be helped. But I think he and I both fall on the same side of that debate. On the question on qualification, I'll leave most of that to Ken, the disqualifying others. I would simply say there are many governments around the world that are elected that we don't get along that well with. For a long time in the first term, we didn't get along with the French and the Germans. There are elected governments in Latin America we don't get along with. So I would say the issue is not are we allowed to say who can and can't run an election. We aren't. But on the other hand, we are not obligated to have wonderful relations and embrace every government that gets elected by its country, witness Hamas.
I'll follow the Lauren on that point because I was on the ground during the election, and it's the first time in 20-some years of observing elections that we did not meet with one of the major contenders participating in the process. And we had recommended since 2002 that there should be qualification for candidates, that ultimately if you believe that an electoral process is about pursuing your political aims peacefully, that's ultimately what the process is, that there should be some admissions price for entering the political process. Hamas had no candidate, the Palestinian Authority had no candidacy requirements. I believe there should have been candidacy requirements before entering the political process for Hamas. I don't think you can participate in a political process on Monday and then advocate violence on Tuesday. That even if they established a Sinn Féin, if they began that initial process of dividing the politics with the military side, it would have been, I think, some progress. And in terms of accepting the results, I mean, I remember when Haider won the elections in Austria, the first reaction of the European Union was to clamp sanctions on Austria because they felt that Haider did not represent the values of Europe. So I don't think that just because somebody wins an election, you have to embrace the victor of those elections. So I believe strongly in candidate requirements, and I think there's a fundamental difference between parties that advocate violence and parties that play by the rules. I would say that there is very little difference, I think, between Lauren and myself and between NDI and IRI. I think there are many different types of Islamist-based parties. And I think when working on the ground, that there is, I talked about this third way, between a lot of forces in these societies, weak and often marginalized between the religious forces and the regimes that are seeking to expand political space for themselves. They need outside support and outside assistance in this effort. But I think it would be very difficult to ignore parties that are based on Islamic values simply because it's based on Islamic values. It would have meant that we didn't work with the AKP in Turkey. And I think the question becomes what types of parties that you're working with. And parties are different. Hamas is different than the Brotherhood. The Brotherhood is different than the PJD. ISLA is different than the Jamaat in Pakistan. There are differences between these parties. And I think the relationship with parties have to be modulated. But to keep excluding parties simply because they are based on religion without going deeper into what their policies are and responding to those that are playing by the rules and want outside linkages, I think it would be self-defeating. It would be difficult to work in these environments by completely excluding them. Thank you.
Michael, can I turn to you and then have Scott close up?
Yes, thank you, because like Professor Becker, I too have to teach in a few minutes, so I may have to leave without the full benefit of Scott's wisdom. But now that he's at the Institute, we can get that over time.
Your wife?
Yes. Well, it's not Mrs. Giuliani.
If it is, we have a new story.
Let me answer your question, Rob, on Tunisia. I don't know anything about Tunisia. But the absence of the limiting factors that I mentioned doesn't guarantee democracy. North Korea doesn't have oil and is ethnically homogeneous and is not a democracy or close to being one. Jeez. But I do want to make two points here. One about the Arab world. One is the absence of an Arab democracy is a problem because countries tend to take their most powerful examples from countries that are like them. They don't necessarily look to the United States. The Eastern European countries look to Western Europe, not to the United States after 1989. So if there could be established a working democracy in the Arab world, I think that would make a big difference. The second point is that the problem with the Arab Middle East is not any one thing, but the fact that all of the unfavorable conditions for democracy seem to be present in rather powerfully in this part of the world. There's nothing unique about this part of the world. It just has more of the obstacles. Then on the issue of whether we should be determining who can take part in an election, my point is not to recommend how the United States government should treat any particular group. That's a matter of foreign policy. It is rather to say that we shouldn't regard some groups as democratic, even though they compete in free elections, and we shouldn't regard their ascension to power as a step toward democracy. After all, to take the North Korean example again, the official name of that country is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and it does have, I think, from time to time, sham elections. That doesn't make it a democracy. So my point is simply I think you have to determine American policy on a case-by-case basis, but let's understand what does and does not promote democracy. Thank you. I'm going to have to go teach. So, Scott, thanks. Please excuse me.
No problem. Thank you. Okay, I guess I'll answer Rob's first question about what I would say to an incoming president for the next administration and what it was that he or she should do in terms of promoting democracy. First, I would say that it is critical that a strong rhetorical stance be maintained. I would say that it's also critical that part of every ambassador's instructions contain instructions that this agenda should continue to be pushed. It doesn't have to be as vocal, it doesn't have to be as loud, but it has to be as persistent. I would also say, for God's sakes, double, triple, quadruple the Middle East Partnership Initiatives programmatics. I agree with Lorne that there has to be this capacity outside the U.S. government. I do not question that. And there I would say that expanding support for the Foundation for the Future or launching a new NED that's directed specifically at the Middle East, maybe based in the Middle East with a powerful board and lots of resources, go for it. But it is important that the State Department maintain an ability to do and advance certain programs. And I think that would take up my 30 seconds. Michelle, I'm with Ken on this one in terms of disqualifying certain actors. I think it's not just the United States. I think it's international norms that should do it. And those norms have evolved over time, and I think that we should make reference to them. And we, certainly the United States, could have done a heck of a lot more to, let's say, jawbone people into accepting the idea, especially as the European Union funded the Palestinian Election Commission, to accept the idea that there had to be certain criteria to participate.
Can I interrupt you just on this question? Just to be clear, I agree with that. Just as I agreed in South Africa that the ANC or PAC and ASAPO, we should not say they should be part of the election. But at the end of the day, the people in the country are going to decide. So I think we should have said Hamas should not be part. But at the end of the day, it's not our election. That leaves us the luxury of recognizing it. Sorry.
That's okay. On the question of, I think, tomorrow's question about DOD, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand how the President of the United States, who is willing to go before the American people and speak to them about this and go to President Mubarak and others, was not able to harness DOD in this process. I understand that we have competing interests and at times, but for the Secretary of Defense or the Undersecretary of Defense or somebody else to make the points as they go out to speak with many of these governments, I think it's important. I don't have an explanation for why it didn't happen. In terms of the role of Congress, very quickly, I think that you can see that as the administration began to waver on some of these things, the Congress is much more active on this, whether it's the Advanced Democracy Act or whether it's monkeying about in Egyptian economic and foreign military assistance, that the Congress is going to play an increasing a role in the whole area of democracy assistance. And if you don't believe me, you can ask their respective boards.
I would add on this, too, when you look at the money for democracy work in Iraq, it is the result of a congressional initiative introduced by Ted Kennedy and supported by McCain, McConnell, Lugar, Biden, Leahy, Smith, and Hatch.
It was not a State Department initiative. And finally, on Iraq, I think Iraq has, I mean, I know Tom Carruthers has written recently in which he uses a very strong statement. He says that democracy promotion efforts by the United States have to be, quote unquote, decontaminated from Iraq. I find it, you know, an extraordinary thing. I mean, it is counterfactual and counter to my experience in the Arab world that since Iraq and since 2004 even, the number of partners, for instance, for the Middle East Partnership Initiative have gone exponentially upwards. I think that this is another canard that the governments themselves are using against us and are putting it out through their state-run media. But it should not be something that inhibits our ability or our interest. And finally, Jonathan's question about Syria. How are we faring? Not well. I think, again, we have a competing set of interests in which there are many within the administration that have been very focused on the idea of promoting and supporting Democrats from within Syria and outside to advance democracy in consistent with Congress's wishes. But there are also those who feel that that would be extraordinarily destabilizing for a number of reasons that I don't have time to get into. So thank you all very much for being here on my kickoff event. And again, I want to thank Lauren, Ken, and Michael for participating.